here's some pictures to pass around. They're terrible quality printing. And I've tried reprinting them several times, and apparently God thinks that I need to just keep them terrible. So, I'm Emmy. I'm a compulsive eater. I've also called myself a food addict. But really, if it has to do with food, I've done it. I've overeaten, undereaten. I've eaten out of the trash. I've eaten off the floor. I've starved myself. I've exercised, bulimia. I mean, you name it. And I found a way to abuse food. And if I wasn't eating it, I was thinking about it. I mean, it was, for 47 years, it was my life. I really believe I was born a compulsive eater. And I didn't struggle with my weight until I got, like, through high school, because I was active and stuff. But food was always a part of my life. I've lost 110 pounds. I've been in program a little over three and a half years. I've been abstinent for a little over 3.5 years. I was blessed with desperation and misery when I walked in these rooms. I was literally at the end of my rope. We've heard people today talk of being suicidal. I was too arrogant to be suicidal. I was the line in the big book that said that, you know, when you read it, it says that, you know, if everybody would just do everything the way I wanted them to do it, then everything would be fine. So really, people, just some simple directions. And that was how I ran my life and ran the lives of everyone around me. And my story in my head was, look, I'm just fat. It's not like I'm drinking. I used to drink. I don't drink now. It's not like I'm drinking. You know, I work full time. I have 3 kids. I even homeschool my kids. So there, my life cannot be unmanageable if I can manage to educate 3 kids. But the truth of the matter was, I walked into OA to lose weight, and that was it. Didn't know anything about it. Somebody else in these rooms told me about it and brought me in, and I had no idea what I was walking into. I held myself together through the first meeting, couldn't tell you what it was about, called the friend of mine who had told me about it on the way home and blabbered crying on the phone for an hour. Like right off on the side of the road, pulled over, couldn't even wait to get home, and cried on the phone for an hour. I just knew I had met people who were me. And I thought I was terminally unique, but not in a nice way. I thought I was just a pig who couldn't stop eating. I live outside of Quaker Town in Upper Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Quaker Town, but if you look in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most number of fast food restaurants in the small square mileage area, you will find Quaker Town, Pennsylvania in Bucks County, and that's where I live. I could not, towards the end of my disease, drive through town, because I don't live in town. I live out, it's a rural area, I live outside of town. I could not drive through town in any way, and to get anywhere you had to drive through town, or that was a story I told myself, without stopping to eat somewhere. And in the last 2 years of my disease, I gained weight. I don't even really know how much. But I racked up and maxed out a credit card at $10,000 because I was a closet eater. I hid my eating completely from everyone. My husband, who I've been married to for, it'll be 25 years in May, and we were together for several years before that, if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times, I don't understand why you struggle with your weight so much. You just don't eat that much. Why is your cholesterol high? You eat the same foods I do. My cholesterol's great. What he didn't know was that I was eating entire meals before I even got home. And of course, it didn't start out that way, but it ended up that way. You know, it started just stopping for quick things here and there, that last final slide. But it ended that way. So getting abstinent for me, I had never really, you know, like so many of us talk about all the diets we ran through, I was raised by a food addict that tried every diet and food plan for me and then tried them on me when I was a kid. So I basically had gone that whole route. I just knew that I was doomed to just eat until I died. It's just, there was no hope for me. I was hopeless. I was 47 years old, couldn't get off the sofa, 3 young children, and I was hopeless. And it wasn't my first meeting, because I really don't even remember my first meeting, and I know I ran out the door. And I came back to the same meeting the second time, and they had a newcomers meeting. And the woman who did it had to have been sent by God, because she had never done a newcomers meeting before, and no one had ever told her that there was a format for it. So she sat me down, and she said, look, she said, we're you, you're me, you know, we can help you. If you want it, we can help you. And I'm like, well, just tell me what to do. She said, get a big book, get a sponsor. The sponsor can show you what to do. And I said, I don't have any money. She said, well, if you're going to buy any book, get a big book. Here it is. You can pay it off. So, well, then, you know, I always thought of myself as super honest, so I don't steal. So I knew I had to come back and pay for the big book. So, because, you know, honest people don't do that. So, because I could be a lot of things, but I am honest to the core. So I did. I didn't know how to get a sponsor, so I called my friend and I said, they told me I need to get a sponsor. And that person said, oh yeah, you definitely need to get a sponsor. So I'm like, well, how do I do that? And he said, oh, find somebody who has what you want. I'm like, I don't even know what I want. I just don't want to be fat and miserable. And so he helped me find somebody. Bless you. And I would, you know, and that really helped me. You know, I asked other, I was so new. I just didn't even know. I asked other people to help me find what I needed in the beginning. I reached out right away. I could see that there were people in this room that were laughing, and there were people in this room who were a normal body size or pretty dang close to it. And there were people in this room that were telling my story, but telling it smiling and not spilling bitter tears. And those are the people I went to and asked for guidance from. And now getting abstinent, that sounded like it was going to be so easy. Well, you know, I'll get abstinent. Just tell me what to eat and I'll eat it. Okay? But really, I was at a point where originally I just skipped breakfast. And then, you know, I had figured out enough about myself that I knew that once I started eating, I could not stop eating. So that I knew. So I just wouldn't start eating. And sometimes I wouldn't eat until late at night. Well, as the time went on, that time got earlier and earlier and earlier. When I came into program, I woke up before I even said good morning to my children. I was in the kitchen cooking something for myself, or roaming around in the refrigerator, or digging something out that I'd hidden from the night before. So the idea of getting abstinent, like, how am I supposed to do this? Like, I can't even drive through town without stopping. I just don't. And I was told that basically I would have to, I asked people with, you know, abstinence. Okay, I've got 3.5 years abstinence. Everybody's heard, well, how'd you get 3.5 years? Well, one day at a time. Okay, one day I couldn't get through one meal. So for me, I started out literally 10 minutes at a time. And I didn't have a higher power. That was like, I believed in God, but like he was way too busy to be bothered with the likes of me. So I made everybody in my program my higher power. And so if I wanted to eat, I would call somebody, even if I left a message on their phone. About time I looked the number up, dialed them, left the message, and redirected myself to something else, like really paying attention to my children who were really homeschooling themselves and each other, you know, focusing on something else that didn't have to do food would get me through the 10 minutes that I needed for that obsession, that feeling to pass. And, you know, I read in the big book, somebody said about, on page 317, there's a paragraph about willingness, and somebody told me about that, and I wrote it on a 3x5 card. 3x5 cards kind of became my life. You ask any of my sponsees, and they got like 3x5 cards shoved everywhere because I just, like, my whole program is on 3x5 cards everywhere. And, excuse me. And I would read that, willingness. I just have to be willing to not want to eat something. And, you know, how did I get through Quakertown? I didn't drive through Quakertown for probably close to 6 months. I drove around Quakertown. When it says on this sheet, it's all about commitment. For me, it was all about commitment. Sometimes that commitment just looked like arrogance, like, screw this. Once I realized it was a disease, it made it easier for me not to hate myself as much. But then it gave me some place to redirect it. Like, you're not going to beat me. It only may be for the next 10 minutes, but you're not going to beat me. And I made a commitment to do whatever I had to do. And that meant driving 20 minutes to my meeting that is 7 minutes from my house, because I had to drive all the way around Quakertown to get there. Then that's what I did. You know, if that meant calling people that I was, like, I was so afraid. And I talked before, I work in an ambulance, but before I did that for 21 years, I was a 911 dispatcher. So people, I talk to people on the phone all the time. Like, nobody called me when they were having a good day. So talking to people wasn't my problem. My problem was being the one that had to ask for help instead of being the helper. But my sponsor kept reminding me, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want to be abstinent? How badly do you want to be alive when your children grow up? How many more days and nights do you want to spend sitting on that sofa with a big dent right where I sat all the time? We still have the same sofa. I still sit in the same place that is permanently dented, but my butt takes up a lot smaller area of the dent now than it used to. And, you know, what do I want? I was at a point that I wasn't going to be able to do my job on an ambulance much longer. Physically, I couldn't do it. I was a heart attack or a stroke walking around waiting for a place to happen. And it wasn't just my weight. It was the anxiety from the constant battle of, when am I going to eat? When is the next food coming? And even when I was originally abstinent, I mean, the withdrawal from the sugar and the flour for me, I still carry my 30-day coin around because they were the worst 30 days of my life. And I grew up in an abusive home. It was one of those childhoods that looked beautiful on the outside and was miserable on the inside. I've had a lot of miserable times in my life. And those 30 days were the hardest 30 days of my life. And I never, ever want to go back and do those 30 days again. And I carry that 30-day coin with me all the time. And I go to meetings and I look at the people who are suffering, ones who are suffering new in the rooms, ones who have picked up, so that I can remember. And this is what keeps me abstinent. And that, even after I got, and the withdrawals, I saw an email went around the Region 7 loop the other day, and the person was talking about the withdrawal symptoms and how hard they were, and they were trying to find a way around it, you know, a way to make it easier. And I didn't find a way to make it easier. The only way to get through it was to get through it. You know, put my head down, you know, close my eyes and say, I can do this for the next 5 minutes. I can do this for the next 10 minutes. It will come to an end. That was the first time I heard, this too shall pass. I've heard it a million times in a million different ways in programs since then. But my sponsor and all my OA people that I called were telling me, it will pass. It will get better. And I'm here to tell you, it passed. And it has gotten nothing but better. And it has not always been easy. I've been through some very, very difficult times in the last 3.5 years. I had to face every feeling and everything that I'd been burying under food and a whole list of other things, because really I'm just a walking, talking, compulsive person. I can abuse anything. If it gets me out of my head and out of my pain or discomfort, I will use it. I am an alcoholic in recovery because when I was younger, that was the first thing I tried because it worked great. But then the consequences became too great, and I put that aside. I was a heavy smoker. I put that aside. And then food became my best friend and stayed my best friend until it almost killed me. And now, thanks to 12-step programs and doing the step work, I don't have to pick up anything anymore, because that hole that I was trying to fill with food, that discomfort, I'll just use that as a roundabout word, that I was trying to shove down, I don't need to do that anymore. I have other things that I can use. Now I'm hooked on God. Now I'm hooked on the steps. Now, you know, I work my program and service. I mean, everything that's been talked about here today keeps me abstinent. I went through a period because I have to deal with these things from my childhood. I can't just walk around pretending that they never happened anymore. I can't just say, oh, it's over and it's done and this is today and I got God and I got my program and I'm good. I can't do that. It became obvious to me after about 1.5 years abstinent that if I didn't do something, those feelings, those emotions they would eventually push me back to one of my addiction. And since food was the easiest, most accessible one, nice and legal, right in the cabinet, I knew that was going to be the first to go. That was going to be it. I cannot go back to where I was. Because before I was too arrogant to kill myself. If I pick up food today, I may as well put a gun in my head, because I'm going to be killing myself. I'm going to die. I don't want to die. I have 3 kids. I love them. I have a husband. We're working on it. I have too much to live for. And it's not because I'm arrogant anymore. It's because I have a wonderful life today. And you know, I've had 2 questions that have stuck out in my head that I want to share with you, because I forgot to ask what time I was supposed to be done. So, okay. Two questions. The first one was, what's the most important thing in your life? Okay. Well, right away I answered God. Without God, I got nothing. Okay. And then immediately behind that was the word abstinence. It's like, well, yeah, because without abstinence, God's there. He's always there. But I don't have any contact with him. I'm blocked off without my abstinence. And I went round and round in my head, because, you know, I'm compulsive and obsessive, so I can compulse and obsess about anything. Thank God for the 10th step. And I never could find an answer. What is the most important thing in my life? Is it abstinence or is it God? It has to be both. Okay? Without my abstinence, God is just there. And I got nothing. Without my abstinence, I got nothing. Without God, I've got no guidance. And this head was wired by God to be different. It's an addict head. But God also gives me the tools, the direction with the steps and the principles of the program and the traditions and the big book and my sponsors, and to live a full productive life, both for me and for others. So, I don't know. What's more important, God or my abstinence? It doesn't matter. As long as I stay abstinent, I got both. You know, I got both of them in my life and my heart. So that's what I keep my focused. I wake up every day. Whoever got up, my attitude is whoever got up first in this room today, that's got the person with the most abstinence. That's it. I got today. And sometimes, really, if I'm not in a good place and I've been, you know, slacking a little on my program here, not talking, doing as much as I should there, thank you for my sponsees, because when it's really bad, they keep me going. They keep me going. It says in the big book that there's nothing that'll keep us on the straight and narrow. I don't remember the exact quote. I'm not one of those can quote the big book people. But that, you know, nothing keeps us sober like working with another alcoholic. That's the gist of it. Nothing keeps me abstinent like working with someone else. Nothing gets me out of my head like working with someone else. My sponsor said when I really just, in the very beginning, when I just, it was, I was going to eat, and it was, God always answers the phone. You know, just talk to God. Walk around in circles talking to God. You know, but and she also said, get out of your own head. So call somebody and ask them how you're doing, how they're doing rather. And when they want to ask you how you're doing, then it's time to get off your phone. You just say, you know what, I'm doing better. And you hang up. And if you still want to eat, call somebody else and ask them how they're doing. It's whatever it takes. That's what it was for me. And you have to want it, because it's not easy. It's nice and simple. I could sit down and write all these ideas down on how I got abstinent when I couldn't even get in my car without eating, couldn't do anything without eating, couldn't open my eyes without thinking about eating, hid food everywhere without, you know, I could make a whole long list of everything I did, but if I didn't want to do it, it wasn't going to happen. And so that's what I do. And I don't have to do it anymore because the obsession's been lifted. And I'm not saying I don't have food thoughts and I don't have food dreams and I don't sometimes sit there and say, dang, man, I ain't never going to eat pizza again. Holy crap. And then I just say, nope. I'm just not eating it today. I have no idea what God has in store for me tomorrow. And I learned the hard way to stop trying to figure it out. All I know is today, and you know what? For today, I don't need it. Today, I'm fine without it. Because, really, I also heard this thing, you know, nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels. And that sounds like cliche. And I kind of snickered when I first heard it because I was still probably like 250 pounds. But it's true. You know, nothing really tastes as good as abstinence feels. The feeling when I finished through that detox, even before, once the physical allergy stopped beating the heck out of me, after like the first month, 2-3 weeks, month, after that happened, and the, you know, I still would get the obsession, you know, from emotions and stuff, because I hadn't done all the step work yet, but the physical allergy had stopped. I felt like somebody had peeled cellophane, like that Claritin Clear commercial. I could, things were brighter, colors were brighter, food tasted better. My kids made me laugh instead of grating on my nerves. That soon into it, I had that much relief. I mean, to give just that up would be, for today is just beyond comprehension for me. It just, it really is. And, I have been blessed in so many ways. I just the physical stuff. Like, really? I walk my dogs. I, for my 50th birthday and my 2-year anniversary of abstinence, bought myself a Harley Davidson. And that was a bucket list item that had been when I was a kid, I rode, and then I got too fat. I told everybody, you know, I have kids, I'm busy, I work too much, that we don't have the money for that. You know what? It was a lie. It was a lie. It was me lying to myself, you know, that honest chick that never lied about anything. Lying to myself. It wasn't me just trying to make myself feel better because the truth hurt too much. The truth was that I physically was unable to ride a motorcycle anymore. And so now I ride my Harley all around. And you know what? A year and a half ago, I crashed that Harley Davidson. And I broke my leg in two places. My lower leg in two places. And I had to have surgery, and I was back in that sofa with my leg up, and I had to ask for help. And that still continues to be one of my toughest things, asking for help. I could never have gotten abstinent without help. I did not do it by myself. I talked the ears off of so many people, you have no idea. I had a couple of people that I really leaned on, but really I just spread it out, whatever I had to do. But now God needed me to sit on my butt and ask for help. And I had to, okay, here is another big one. I had to trust my husband to take care of my food. Now, remember I said we're working on it for my marriage. And we are. We really are. We've been together for a long time when we have been through a lot in our lives together. And we are working on it. But I had to depend on this man for everything. He had to shop. He had to read the labels for me. He had to weigh and measure my food. I'm a huge volume eater. Weighing and measuring for me is my only option for today. That is my option. I weigh and measure all my food. It keeps me safe. You know what? I don't have to think about it. I don't think, did I eat enough? Did I eat too much? My food sensor's broken. So that scale keeps it nice and simple for me. But anyway, so I had to trust him to weigh and measure my food. I had to put my abstinence in his hands. And that, my sponsor says to me, we don't make decisions based in fear in recovery. And I was afraid. I was afraid to turn my food over. He says, being in recovery doesn't mean that we now control our food by, you know, I weigh and measure my food so that I don't have to think about it, not to control it. Okay? So, but I didn't realize until that had happened that I was controlling my food again. In abstinence, controlling my food. So I had to turn it over to, it was another level. It was another level of abstinence. It was another level of acceptance around my food, accepting that God would take care of me. And he did a wonderful job. He did a wonderful job taking care of my food. I always thought that he resented my program, all the time I put into it, that being on the phone, my sponsees, some people, my sponsor, blah, blah, blah. He cared about my program just as much as I did for those 3 months. And that broken leg, that smashed up Harley, which, by the way, got fixed. And I've been back out on. I grew from that. And when that bike went down, my first was, please God, let my son be okay. My 12-year-old son was on the back, or 11-year-old son was on the back of the bike. He was fine. That's all I cared about. And then, you know, after that, I'm like, God, are you kidding me? Like, really? But you know what? He had more for me to learn. More for me to learn. And I looked at that whole experience as, how am I going to learn from this? And you know something? If my husband wasn't up to the task of taking care of my abstinence, I had a plan. Because I got backup plans. My backup plans got backup plans. I work on an ambulance. I don't get meal breaks, you know? I eat when I'm working. But I have, you know, if I get too busy and I can't eat, then I have snacks that I can eat, and it's all pre-done with my sponsor. It's all pre-made up. I don't wing it with my food. It's not necessary, and it feeds my disease in my head. So that's the tiger that's going to win, my recovery or my disease. Whoever I take care of, that's who's going to win. So my backup plans have backup plans, and that's my safety net. You know, in the longer And I'm a baby, man. I got 3.5 years. That's like a nothing. You know, I'm like 50. If I don't get, or 51 now, if I don't get like run over by a truck tomorrow, because you never know what's going to happen. I want to go to my grave abstinent. I don't care if I'm 51 and however many days and an hour on the way home today or tonight at work, or hey, it is what it is, Mom. Or if I'm 98 years old, you know, with my great-great-grandchildren hanging around me, I don't care. I want to be abstinent when I go, because I don't want food to control me anymore. I want my life to be lived out the way it was intended. And when I'm filling myself with substances, that's not happening. And the other question that somebody asked me one time was, and this was too weird, but I'm going to share it anyway because I'm weird. If, let's say, I'm sentenced to death. I killed somebody, I'm sentenced to death, I'm in prison. Is my last meal going to be an abstinent one? I didn't hesitate. Damn straight it's going to be. Damn straight it's going to be. And that is, that really for me, that's for me, that's where, that's kind of says it for me. That no matter what, I'm abstinent. I'll do whatever it takes. If my sponsor says to me, you know what, Emmy, you're going to have to stand on your head in the corner for an hour every day. I am going to stand on my head in an hour, for a corner every hour every day. And I'm going to bitch and moan about it. But I'm still going to do it. It doesn't matter. And you know something, I'm not saying my sponsor has all the answers or that everybody I talk to had all the answers, because I got some pretty crazy advice along the way. But you know what? It was a heck of a lot better than what I was doing. And the biggest thing, it says in the big book that anyone who can be honest with themselves can recover. And the first place I had to get honest with myself was around the food. And once I did that, it got a little easier, because I didn't have to keep track of all my lies anymore. And even, you know, I would lie to myself and then have to keep track of my own lies. Like, really? Like, just the serenity from not having to keep track of the lies around the food of the lies took off a whole layer of not wanting to eat over something. Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know if my time's up, but thanks for letting me share.
Any questions or comments?
Sure.
Thanks.
My mother.